40 down, 61 to go.
Can you believe that we're here again? These sort of chapter markers are coming around faster and faster, yet we're not even halfway there yet.
No, I know, I've still got like 10 or 11. I don't know where the halfway point is actually, because it's sort of 50 and a half.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We will stop at 50 and a half and cheer.
Anyway, hello and welcome to the Sign Up Why podcast. We're your hosts, Claire.
And Chris. And if you're new, then we're a married couple, we're childless, not by choice, and we're on this mission to find and explore 101 different types of permanent loss to see if it's possible to find joy and hope.
And so far, yes.
In every kind of loss. We've reached loss number 40, and in this episode, we'll reflect back on our fourth batch of 10 losses. That's number 31 to 40, like we do every time we have another 10 losses under our belt.
And we've got another diverse range of losses in this batch, including two, which we did ourselves. Loss of photos and loss of the Queen.
At one point, you did wonder if we'd managed to get one of our own episodes into every batch. And now we've gone and done two. Greedy.
Hey, if I get desperate enough, we might end up doing all the losses between 91 and 101.
Loss of a plan.
Yes. So between episodes 45 and 62, we covered our last 10 losses. But I just want to take a moment to explain that not all our episode numbers do actually line up to the loss numbers, because we throw a lot of bonus episodes in, like we said, about blogs and things on TV or announcement episodes. Plus, we've also got our Let's Chat episodes in there where I chat to experts and people with experience in particular areas of loss. So they're all numbered, but that just explains why they don't all line up with our losses.
So let's take a moment to remind ourselves of who we've spoken to in the last 10 losses.
Hello, my name is Irina Karaseva, and I lost the experience of a typical parenthood.
Hello, my name is Vlad Korotkov, and we're here to talk about Angelman syndrome, disability, and how a seemingly devastating syndrome can actually have some silver linings.
Hello, my name is Peter Ellis, and 4 years ago, I had a massive stroke, which has left me severely disabled. And through that, I've experienced a huge amount of loss.
Hi, my name is Huiwen Sato, and I'm here to talk about the loss of health and life in my pediatric patients as a nurse.
I'm Greg Williams. I'm going to talk about the loss of my 2.5-year-old granddaughter, Reagan, my sunshine, and the healing journey that began when she left us.
Hi, my name is Edie Nathan, and I'm here to talk about the losses incurred through sexual grief.
Hi, my name is Mary Turner Thompson, and I'm here to talk about several losses, but mostly about what I saw as the loss of my reality.
Hey, I'm Mark Riddles. I'm here to talk about my loss of riding a motorbike following a crash, which happened last year.
I'm Sheridan Voisey. I'm here to talk about the loss of dreams. And for us, that was the loss of the dream of having a family. And then for me, later on, the loss of a radio show. I got one, I didn't get the other, I ended up losing both.
Quite a diverse range of guests and accents. Good to throw in some Irish and Russian and Australian in among the usual American and British.
Yep, love an accent. And it's funny how people find it so hard to work out their own accents and whether they have them. I'm not actually sure where we start with this broad range of losses to chat, really, because there's a lot going on with these. They're not just bereavements, they're not just in any one particular area, they're split into all kinds of losses, which I love about it. Is there anything that immediately jumps out when you look back at these 10 as a whole?
Well, absolutely. It's the enjoyment that I and we get, and those we speak to get, just from talking in depth and detail, going through experiences. It's a really healthy thing to discuss this stuff. Enjoyment of just that depth of chat and sharing emotion and experience has been really, really valuable.
And of course, in this batch, like we said, we've been a bit greedy. There were two that were just done by us. So we'll talk about those first and get them out of the way, and then we'll talk about our guests. So we did Loss of the Queen, which we didn't have scheduled in our loss list, but she very unfortunately, I was going to say selfishly.
She very unfortunately. Bit mean,
she very unfortunately died partway through our schedule, and we thought with a loss like this that the whole nation over here was facing, well, the whole world in some respects, obviously, because everyone knew about it, but over here in particular, people were dealing with it in very different ways. And so we felt like we need to do a few episodes on this, just looking at how the country's mourning, what a loss like this looks like. It's so rare over here for us to face the death of a monarch.
I mean, there's absolutely no way we can't discuss this. It's literally a once-in-a-lifetime occasion that we all never experience, that level of recognition, collective mourning and grieving, you know, to be in a country that's in a national time of grief, in a country that's quite divided on most subjects. So while you had people really embracing that time, there are also people resisting it and resenting it. You know, the royal family is divided. It was just a bonkers time. Really interesting to be a part of it. And so, of course, we're going to talk about it. You know, we're trying to get to 101 different types of permanent loss. Of course, an episode is going to be loss of your queen.
Yeah, and what was really interesting was seeing the different age ranges and how people were reacting to it, because we had people that were in their 70s and 80s that have had her on the throne for the whole time, maybe seen her, you know, dealing with the aftermath of the world wars and those sorts of things. And then we had young people who probably don't even think about the monarchy or who's ruling a country or what that even means yet. And they kind of like, what, they don't really see what the big deal is. And we saw this whole range of different opinions on, not only on the monarchy, but on her. And I think the more we learnt about her after she died, the more respect some of us had for a lot of things we didn't know, but also that it brought grief out into the kind of the conversation. You know, in the media, it was, people were talking about it. They were talking about loss and how people were dealing with it. And it was interesting to see language used as well, because we weren't really using the word dead or death very often. A lot of euphemisms were used, even on the BBC, when it came to things like, you know, she's passed away. Or it was an interesting take on how our country deals with death, really.
And I remember from that time as well, and what we talked quite a bit about in that particular episode was, in that element that you mentioned about, we watched so much. It was really interesting for the first time, because of technology being as it is now, that we had insight into so much of the personal and the private, as well as the public grieving. And behind closed doors, we saw protocol, and then in public we saw queuing and filing past the Queen's coffin as she was lying in state, as it's called. So it's really interesting just to be an observer of grief on a private royal scale through to just a public national scale. That was something I probably will never forget. And as we're feeling now, actually, you know, months on from that, the nation's changed. The royal family's changed. We're still adjusting. You know, we have King Charles now. And clearly, as many of us who have experienced loss and grief in our own lives, certainly on a permanent scale, quite often want to replace whatever it was we've lost. But actually, you can't. It's coming to terms with the fact you can't replace. You know, we can't replace the Queen, that we're now adjusting to life with a new head of state, head of the Commonwealth. And that's King Charles. We have no say in that. And some of us are finding it a lot harder than others to adjust to that and accept it.
And obviously, we haven't had his coronation. We've got that coming up in a few months. So there is a whole year almost in between the two, which I think is quite nice, really, because you're not forced into suddenly having this big new celebration for the next king or queen. We have that space to adjust before we then have the coronation and, you know, it's all made official. But I think one of the things I loved about the whole situation was we found out a lot of stories about the Queen after she died, and a lot of things about her private life that we would never have heard about before. And stories like the fact that she would just go walking or driving around her estate in Balmoral, and she'd come across local people. There were some lovely stories about walkers who she would bump into, and they wouldn't know who she was, and she was just in her old Land Rover with her old clothes on and a headscarf, and they'd be chatting to her and sort of say, oh, they saw the Queen once around here, and then they'd go on their way, and they had no idea they'd just been chatting to the Queen. And like, those sorts of stories, I think, really endeared people to her, and we'd never have known that before. So it's also, through the loss, it's brought out some lovely aspects to her nature and her life as well.
I'm sure that the royal family are enjoying now this period of time out the headlines and out the spotlight.
Yes, indeed. So the other episode that we did ourselves was a personal loss that we had faced and potentially caused by me, was the loss of photos, which was another one we wanted to cover, because we want to cover all losses, and this might be smaller on the scale of some losses, but it doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. And I happened to drop our hard drive maybe like 2 feet from the ground, hit a wooden floor, and seemingly seemed fine, but I managed to erase effectively 5 years worth of photos, which included a lot of big holidays we'd done and special moments with families or children that had been born in that time, and hundreds of other things that were on there that I thought I should capture in photo form. So that was something we just wanted to talk through and look at, because I'm sure everybody at some point has dropped a phone or lost a phone and it's taken off all the contacts, or you've just, you know, lost stuff. And it's just that, ugh, it's that sick feeling that just hits you, and then you just know there's nothing you can do.
And we still, you know, keep thinking about it. You know, probably once every fortnight at least we think, oh, I must go and dig out that image or reminder of that moment or that occasion. And then we're like, oh no, we haven't got the photos.
Yeah.
So we learned a valuable lesson. That was loss number 35.
And then some other ones we did. So we've had, in this section of 10, we had another one that we focused on, which was looking at loss faced through a job or through a career. And we spoke to Wei Wen, who is a paediatric intensive care nurse in Los Angeles. And she was talking about what it's like to work with children and patients that are that ill, which obviously means you see a lot of death as well. And we think this is a really interesting area to explore, chatting to people who work in areas where their day-to-day job is likely to involve some kind of loss or death. And we spoke to Steve Keogh, the murder detective, in the previous 10. So it was nice to just do another one of those. And that was a really poignant and interesting take, I think, on what it's like to work with death of children, basically.
And to handle it within a workforce as well, that stood out to me. And I've since doing that episode with Wei Wen, cause to think about how my own team at work deals with processing loss, processing grief. You know, since we did that episode, we've had a death at work of a colleague. We've had some big job news about loss of jobs and permanent sort of loss of jobs and threats of redundancy. And to quote Wei Wen exactly, she said, "I feel that we have a very, very supportive environment with regards to acknowledging the emotions and grief of the staff." And I wonder how many of us can say that about the places that we work, whether it's a large team or a small team. You know, do you feel like you've got a very supportive environment with regards to acknowledging the emotions and grief of the staff? Because you don't, you know, that may be more obvious in a job and a workplace where you are dealing with loss, you know, let's say an undertaker, or if you're working in a hospital, less so in just a fairly standard office environment. But you still are dealing with humans, and all humans go through loss and despair, hopeful and hopeless times. So how supportive is your environment? And that was really challenging for me, to be able to go into my workplace and just try and do little bits to improve that environment to make it supportive for those dealing with loss.
Which is not something many people do. I know that Wei Wen spends a lot of time trying to help the younger generations and new nurses coming through to help educate them about this is what this kind of loss and grief looks like, and you don't have to be superhuman to deal with it. It's important that you learn you're gonna grieve. And it's a kind of a cruel dynamic with a lot of these jobs, because people go into nursing because they want to help and they care and they have a heart for looking after people, and you know, and soft hearts to be able to do that well as well. But then at the same time, that doesn't mean that because it's their job and they chose that, they're just naturally really good at dealing with grief and loss, or that they're sort of heartless and they don't engage with people and they can just watch these deaths happen and it not affect them. And so it's a really difficult thing. I don't think workplaces really, well, it sounds like they're not catering to that as much as they should. It's almost like, well, you chose this role, so therefore you just need to toughen up and do it. But that's not really the case with grief. Nobody just toughens up and gets over the death of a close relative or something else in their life. So it's a really interesting one to look at, and I know that Wei Wen's done other talks and a TED talk about this as well, and I really hope that other nurses and people in healthcare professionals and stuff see it and draw from it. Actually, we need to be more supportive and give people coping strategies to be able to get through this kind of stuff.
It almost feels like there's a balance, and we don't quite know how to get that balance right, because, you know, we could maybe summarise generations gone by as not being anywhere near enough recognition, maybe, or talking about some of this stuff. And now, have we gone really far, too far in the other direction? You know, do we think about it and talk about it too much? Because it can be pretty overwhelming stuff, particularly if you're in a, you know, when you're in a job or you're dealing with multiple losses and you don't have time to sit and process them. You know, there's got to be a line somewhere, a healthy line between recognition but also knowing that you've got to get on. And there's, you know, we do want to encourage people to take the time you need, you know, things like be kind to yourself, be patient, but you have to find the right balance with actually you do have to get up and get on. And it's really difficult to know how to strike that balance.
Yeah, because you can't give people a day off work every time a patient dies. It has to be, like you said, they have to go in the next day and they have to continue to do their job. So I think it's just, it's education around how do you do that? Or how do you support a colleague that's on a shift that just had a really bad day the day before? Or I don't know, there'll be people out there far more experienced in this than we are, but there definitely needs to be more done in that area. So we spoke to Wei Wen for Loss 34, but for Loss 31, we spoke to Vlad Narina, whose daughter Emily has got Angelman syndrome. So we were talking to them about what it's like to parent a child with disabilities, where her learning is going to be very different from other children, and they were mourning the loss of a lot of things in parenting that they would have expected to do that they weren't able to do. And just a little update on that, they were expecting a baby when we spoke to them. They've had that baby. They had a little boy. So congratulations to Vlad and Irina for their newest addition. And that was a really interesting episode, just to get that take on it from another side. You've got people nursing these children in hospitals, but then you've got somebody who's having to take their child to hospital a lot and kind of work through having a child that's not got the same progress as maybe other children.
And another area that they spoke so well into, similar with loss number 40, which was Sheridan, was about the expectations followed by disappointment, where you expect much that doesn't happen and then having to deal with the disappointment of that. So when you expect, like you just mentioned, a child to be born in a certain way, as many would do, they'd expect full health, etc. But when that doesn't happen, how do you deal with it? And I think they were brilliant at, particularly I get the impression Vlad loves to plan. And so to know how to manage expectations, to manage a scenario, to be ready for whatever may come along. So I was really inspired by how much time and consideration they'd given to planning out the first sort of, or the next number of years of Emily's life.
Yeah, and they were very conscious, I think, of how the loss can live alongside the joy. They seemed to be very intentional about finding the joy in life. There was a lot of loss they'd been through, and there were moments that would make them sad, and you think, well, we're not going to probably get that with Emily. But at the same time, they were very conscious to find the good things, to kind of keep pressing on, to appreciate their relationship. Irina really appreciated having a job that she enjoyed, that she would go out and do. They're very into the community and with other parents who have got children with Angelman syndrome. They were celebrating the small victories. They wanted to get involved with the bigger picture with Angelman syndrome as well, and try and help with the research that's going on there to find a cure and all these sorts of things. And they were sort of holding it all in tension, and that's not easy to do, and it is a choice to do that. It would be so easy just to become the victim of the situation. But I really admired how they were so honest about the pains of how difficult it can be. But equally, they were very intentional about finding the joys as well.
Remind me of the Russian saying that Vlad brought up.
I wish I had to hand what my transcription service thought it said in English, because it translated it into a bunch of words that made no sense at all. But yes, Vlad did give us his favourite phrase in Russian, which is coming up in the Hermans later on.
I've just got it here in front of me now. The literal translation, I'm not going to try and say it in Russian, is everything is discovered or understood in comparison or in relation to other things. And again, we talk about a healthy balance, because comparison can often be an unhealthy thing. But if you use it for good, to be able to sort of keep your expectations in check, then it must be a good thing.
I love that you even think you could pronounce it in Russian, because I've seen the letters the Russian use on that transcript, and it's not something you can try and pronounce.
No, we'll leave that to Vlad. Thanks, yeah. Vlad.
Like you mentioned, we also spoke to Sheridan in Loss 40, our latest one, about loss of dreams, which I think is something that comes in to a lot of losses, because without even knowing it, sometimes we have a dream about life, about future, and sometimes that dream is taken away with something else. But for Sheridan, it was taken away, well, it was with something else, really. It was with their kind of infertility and childlessness. He also lost his career that he was building. And I think that's a hard loss to swallow, because I think for most of us, we assume a little bit in life, or we hope that if our personal life is going badly, then maybe we're doing well at work or in some other area, and vice versa. And for Sheridan, the whole infertility situation and childlessness resulted in a move from Australia to the UK to start a new dream, but that actually meant he had to end the career that he'd been building and dreaming about for a long time. So that was a really interesting take on dreams and just having to let go of them sometimes and start new beginnings.
And I have a real personal challenge that I need to do a lot more work on, that I recognise in myself. So this, you know, depending on your own philosophy, spirituality, the way that you process things, is how you measure bad against good. That if a lot of bad happens to you, I can certainly feel like I want an equal amount of good to follow it. And that clearly is not the way it works. Many people experience no end of bad and only a little good. But I have this feeling that, well, if I've experienced a lot of bad, I need a lot of good to balance it out. And Sheridan spoke really well into that. And I certainly am nowhere near having that cracked as yet, but I want to. And I just think that is an experience that many people can feel.
Yeah, he described it well, where he was talking about, you know, it's not a numerical thing. It's not a case of you lost this much, so therefore you get this much back again, because you can't even compare the two, which I thought was really interesting. And it's, you know, it's a weird thing, isn't it? We have this belief that for some reason, if something bad happens to us, it should even out into something good at some point. Where do we get that from? What's to say that we're not going to have a bad life, that everything will go wrong, that no matter how hard we try, it's going to be really difficult? Where along the line does people think it should be good? Many people in the world are starving or born into countries with no flowing water and all these sorts of things. There's a lot of people worse off than us. But even over here, where we're relatively rich compared to many other countries, we still think that life should go even better for us all the time. And take away any faith aspect, which a lot of people will have, which, you know, implies that there are blessings and, you know, there are things we go through that are hard. If you haven't got that in your life, what makes you think it should be good? I don't know. I don't know where it's come from. I don't know if it's a culture thing. I don't know if it's something inherently in us, but there is this belief that happened to me, that was bad, therefore it should get better. Maybe it's just comparison with other people.
It's more than that. It's part of every story, isn't it? There's good versus bad is it's to be found in everything. It's the thread of, I guess, our very existence. Good versus bad in films, good always wins, good always triumphs, stories, music. So when you experience bad, you wait for good to ride in and rescue the day. Mm. And sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it takes months. Sometimes it takes years. So it's a challenge to be able to sit in the bad without thinking it's okay, tomorrow will be a lot better, because it might not be. We hope it will be, of course, and that's part of the reason for this podcast, is that we are looking to say, how did you find hope? How did you find joy when you're in that darkness, that bad place? And thankfully, so many people are saying, here's where I found it, here's what happened, which is encouraging, gives us hope.
We all need hope.
Yes, we do.
And then amazingly, with the last 10 losses we're looking at now, I'm just looking through to make sure I've got this right, but yes, so loss 36 was the only one where we were dealing with a bereavement. And for a podcast about loss, there's been times when we've had batches of 10 losses where I've thought, a lot of these are still bereavements. We're trying to say, look, there's lots of different kinds of loss. It's not just about bereavement, but sometimes they do dominate because they are connected to so much loss and grief. But with this 10, really fascinatingly, we've only got one, and that was Greg Williams, we spoke to for loss 36, which was loss of a young granddaughter. And that was a really interesting chat, because we'd done loss of a child in many different ways, really, in different ages, but we hadn't done it from a grandparent's point of view, just that one step removed on the family tree. So it was very interesting to see what that looked like and the dynamics and the relationship. And he was so honest and real about that, especially because he lost his granddaughter at the hands of somebody else through shaken baby syndrome. And that's a difficult thing to swallow, when it's almost like we talked to him about a preventable death. How do you process that? How do you work through it? And Greg's such a beautiful writer and loves to express things by writing them down. So there's a lovely element to that interview about his journal writing and how he'd kept notes all the way through what was going on with his granddaughter.
And certainly what stood out to me about that conversation, what I've remembered since, is just how I felt the joy, but then the sadness, as Greg described how Reagan just fit him perfectly. When he would hug her, when she would lay on his chest, as sort of granddad and granddaughter relationships were deepening, that she just fit perfectly on his chest physically. And that was such a lovely image. But then the sadness that has now been lost, and that hasn't been replaced. And he said, as each grandchild, sort of subsequent grandchild has come along, he said, I think I've tried to establish that connection again, and it's kind of hit and miss. Describes how some of the subsequent granddaughters have been quite stiff or not wanted that sort of contact as much. He said, but I think all of the grandchildren, in a way, have kind of gone through that test with me. So really meaningful how to have established that with his first granddaughter, that relationship that he then went on to lose, and not being able to replace that. But it was beautiful and really sad and deep as well. So that I remember him talking about that really fondly.
And I love that his line that he uses in a lot of stuff when he's talking and writing things is that it is still a wonderful life. You can still make it a wonderful life. It can still be a wonderful life, even when you've been through some really horrific stuff. And I've thought that a few times when you're going through something that's, you know, not quite as you'd want it to be, or it's something awful. It's come into my mind, it is still a wonderful life. There is still so much we can appreciate and be thankful for. And I found that just in nature or other things around you, that, you know, it's nice to try and remember that. There's still so much here to enjoy and take away, even when things can be quite painful. And then in Loss 32, we spoke to Peter Ellis about loss of physical ability after a stroke. Peter had suffered a stroke just after he'd retired, and it had taken away a lot of things that he loved doing. And physically, he's still going through rehab and he's still working through a lot of that loss of the things he can't do and the retirement he thought he would have. And I think that was quite a hard one really to listen to, because it's so difficult when you're going through something like that that's so all-encompassing around yourself, to still find things to enjoy and celebrate, because you had to let go of so many things you love doing and you have no control over it. You have to let go of them because you can't do them, but you don't want to let go because you love doing them. And that just made me question, you know, how would I be in that situation? How would I feel about having to use a wheelchair sometimes? How would I feel about not being able to do the things that you love? Like, you know, he loved cycling and playing the piano, all things that were going to be incredibly difficult if he'd ever do them again. And it really, it challenges you on, could I find things to love with my new physical restrictions, even though I didn't want to love them? I wanted to be doing the original things. I just found that really challenging.
It is. And a stroke in particular, I think, is really challenging in a way of knowing what is a permanent change and what is actually something that could improve. Well, it often feels like when you hear about people that have suffered strokes that the recovery is so varied. Some people can be back on their feet really quickly. Others are left paralysed temporarily or even permanently. It's a really tough thing, I think, for an individual stroke survivor. Yes, there's a community of stroke survivors, but presumably lots have different stories. And as you mentioned, I think for Peter, certainly letting go was a core theme for one of the things he's learnt and is learning. And a challenge in that, even to me, is, you know, to avoid at all costs that sort of, well, I'll work now thinking that when I get to retire, I'll then enjoy ... or I'll give my all now, so then, you know, in years to come, I will be able to travel, sit, relax, garden, whatever it may be. Because we have no idea what that looks like. And for Peter, you know, he does have a story of having worked hard, built up businesses, handed them on, and then suddenly found with all this plan to renovate a house, do all sorts of work with his husband, that all came crashing down and he had to let go of those ambitions, those dreams, those plans, because of having to come to terms with the fact that actually now I've got to just get by day to day and work out what I can do physically.
And it's really difficult to know with things like that how much you hope. You can work at things and some of your abilities might come back. Your body might get stronger and suddenly it can do this and that again. But the same with Vlad and Irina, with their daughter Emily. How much hope do you put in something that it might happen, knowing that it might not? And that's really difficult, because you could put all your hope in it and then when it doesn't happen, just end up with these dashed dreams that you've got to live with. Or you could think, you know what, I'm not going to have any hope at all that's going to happen. But then that makes life just a bit miserable. So it's a really, really hard balance to find. How much hope is that kind of expression again that we've mentioned before? Dare to hope. Do you dare to hope that things might get better? Or are you putting hope in the wrong things? And do you need to find things you can put hope in that are more life-sustaining and not things like abilities? It makes me realise, how much do I rely on those? If you take those away, am I strong enough spiritually, mentally, emotionally to deal with not being able to walk, not being able to use my hands? Or is that what I put everything in? You know, it's really hard, really challenging, but really interesting to talk to him about that. And he was so honest about how hard it was and how bitter he's felt at times and how difficult it is for other people to say the right thing as well. How even in the right things that have actually meant something to him, hearing them at the time has been quite painful and annoying. And he wished they hadn't been said. But then looking back, he's like, yeah, it kind of makes sense. And, you know, just dealing with all that is very difficult. And then another one we dealt with, another loss, was a bit interesting, a bit different. And when I first heard about it, I was quite keen to talk about it because it's not something that's easy to talk about. And that was loss through sexual grief in Loss 37, which was chatting to Edie Nathan, who has a lot of experience in this area of as a therapist and looking at the whole area of sexual grief, which is something she's written and writing on at the moment. And that was something that was interesting. So I don't think a lot of people would think about this, but equally, if they did think about it, I don't think it's something many people talk about, because, you know, loss, death, grief, people keep away from those subjects as it is. Throw in anything sexual, and I think it gets a little bit kind of embarrassing and awkward for some people, whether it's about loss through sexual abuse or the loss of a sexual relationship or an aspect of a relationship that was sexual. It's not something that people naturally talk about. So it was really lovely to be able to chat to someone about that and what it can look like and all the different elements that can entail.
And, you know, we use the word sex, and clearly for some of us, your mind might jump to what you said there about abuse, sexual abuse. That's the stuff we're talking about. But there's so much more to it. And I raised in that episode those feelings, the difficulties that I still face now, with the COVID pandemic that we've all come through and the damage that's done to physical relationships. And, you know, when I meet people for the first time, and I'm still doing it every week at work when I meet people, there's this thing in me now that stops me from reaching out to shake a hand. If I see a friend, you know, I don't go to hug them as quickly as I maybe did before. So we have lost, even as a society, a warmth that we did once have through physical contact. And that's difficult. That's hard to come to terms with, to recognise. And then to think, yeah, you know, it does have an impact on relationships. There's a coolness, a coldness that you can break and get away from quicker when there's physical contact, when there's a handshake, when there's a hug, a physical greeting. And, you know, we talked about that during that episode as well. It's really interesting to hear her sort of say, yeah, absolutely, that's part of it. It's not just the, what, you know, her own experience being sexually abused as a younger girl. Not just that side of things. Well, that clearly is a big talking point and something that we can look on as just being horrific. But there are other ways that we can all feel this as well. So, yeah, fascinating conversation.
Yeah, and people who were dating during COVID, I think she spoke about that, you know, people in their 20s and, well, anyone who's dating, I guess, any age, there's a loss of that contact, a lot of not seeing people, not dating, not going out, not meeting people, not having those experiences face to face. It's, you know, it's a huge, huge loss on many levels. Yeah, that was a really interesting one to talk about. And then another one we did was Loss 38 with Mary Turner Thompson, which was loss of a reality. And again, another interesting area. Some of these losses are sort of like these sort of big, almost intangible subjects like sexual grief. And then another one, really, loss of a reality, which was really interesting because Mary had a story of marrying a con man and a bigamist. It turned out to be a sex offender and lots of other things. I can't even begin to summarise her story in a short amount of time, but worth listening to. But she basically lost everything when she found out that her husband had another wife. And he'd conned her out of a lot of money, so that she lost her house, her car, her husband. The whole thing just fell apart overnight. She sort of lost everything, but not because of a death, although there was a death of her life there, reality, but everything just sort of fell apart. And it was very interesting and complex, really, to look at that and what it feels like to lose all those relationships and everything just to vanish just because of a phone call and being conned. It was a fascinating thing. When we were talking to her about what is the loss, what is the loss here? Is it loss of a husband? Is it loss of this? We worked out, well, actually, it was her reality. Her whole reality just went away.
It was certainly an episode that will stick in the memory because of the content. You know, a couple of books have come out of it for her. But it's like speaking to someone about a movie plot, wasn't it? Yeah. It was remarkable. It's like, oh, you know, so much of the detail was like, this is incredible. Yeah. The lengths that her husband went to set up home when he also had home elsewhere. It's, you know, it's the sort of thing you only see on telly. It was just remarkable. So being able to talk to her about that, but I guess obviously a lot deeper than just watching a TV program, is that this wasn't entertainment. This was somebody's life. This was the vulnerability. Everything that she had opened up to and trusted and loved this individual who was a psychopath. You know, and again, I have to keep checking myself because I'd use the word psychopath as almost like an insult. Like it's just a negative word rather than just being a term for someone maybe that has no feelings. That's not the definition of it, by the way, but that's an interpretation.
Yeah, that was really interesting to hear specifically her going into the details of what a psychopath is, having studied it since meeting Will, her husband. I think that added an extra element to it that I was really interested in, just hearing about what a psychopath is. But the thing I found most fascinating with that interview was that out of everything she'd lost, it was her mum dying a few months after all this happened that had really caused pain that she still deals with now, many years later, because having lost all of that, and like she said, I've lost the ability to trust anybody now, but her mum was the one constant that was there through all of it. And then to lose her on top of that, that seemed to be the thing that she almost struggled with the most.
We have in our own ways, you know, almost like life rafts, that if something happens, if a tragedy happens, then quite often we'll find someone or something who'll be our life raft and help save us. And then if you end up losing that life raft as well, you know, she talks about losing her mum, and there's still that raw emotion that she sort of still gets emotional as she thinks about actually what she lost when her mum died. in clearly such a different way. You know, it's not the sort of thing that books and movies will be made out of, as opposed to her other story of losing her husband, losing her reality. But it's the one that just still breaks her heart. That sadness is there of you know, the loss of her mum. But, oh, incredible story. It was really, really fascinating to speak to Mary.
And then Lost 39 was chatting to Mark Riddles, who lost something that he loved, but also had to make the decision to lose it, and was something that other people might have actually been pleased that he'd lost.
This was great, wasn't it? This was probably the lightest of the 10, the brightest of the 10. You know, it's a subject area that is just really enjoyable to talk about. I mean, there was a difficulty in that he had a motorbike crash. So there was difficulty there, and that's left him with some physical impairments. And he chose then to give up his two motorbikes to end his love of motorbikes. But yeah, you know, it was something we've experienced of giving up a motorbike. You know, we have been, in fact, even this morning, as I was driving away from where I was this morning, I saw the exact version of my motorbike parked several sort of car lengths away from where my car was parked. And I glanced at it several times, almost in a way thinking, that is exactly the same. And just bringing back those feelings of what it was like to ride it. And Mark, yeah, had a real love, a deep passion for motorbike riding, just loved the freedom, loved the speed, loved being out in the, you know, he'd ride in all weathers. It was his only mode of transport. Absolutely loved it, but got to a point where he had to choose to give it up. And as you said, yeah, to have something that you lose, but actually others may be thankful for that, others may have wanted that, is quite a confusion to have to process.
Yeah, really complicated. And we were keen to ask him that as well, because if you've had a motorbike or you've been on a motorbike, then you've probably encountered somebody suggesting it's dangerous. Like, I don't think you can get away from that across the board with bikes. We were sort of keen to ask straight away, have you had people saying, well, told you so, we knew that was going to happen, or I'm glad it's gone.
Phew.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, of course, he had that. And that's really difficult when it's something you really love and enjoy, especially if you're a careful rider and you're not just careless with it. So you're trying to take care anyway. So yeah, it was interesting to have to sort of say, what does it feel like to A, have to give it up through choice a little bit? Because he could push through, but his decision to not push through and get another one and get straight back on was because he had a family and a wife and other people, you know, that he needed to look after, and they didn't want him to get back on it. So you've got to weigh up those feelings, but also the fact that something you've gone, you don't really get to grieve it as such, because people are saying, that's good, told you so, that's a good thing, glad you're not getting back on one of them, that's for the best. And that must be really difficult, because it sort of tells you, oh, I probably shouldn't be sad about this because it's a good thing, which is confusing. So yeah, it was really interesting just to explore that. What does that feel like? What does that look like? And I think to educate other people, because again, a lot of people would be quite judgmental about that. And so someone's lost a bike, they can't go on it again, they're injured. You know, if your gut reaction is, that's good, I mean, that is not a good response to anybody grieving anything, because he's lost it. What good does it do to tell them that's good? You should at that point be asking, how does that feel? It's not like you're going to make him go out and get another one. It's like, you know, why not just engage with that grief and let it happen, rather than feeling like you have to get the upper hand and say, I told you so.
Yeah, there's a golden rule in there, absolutely, for all of us, that no matter, well, what the relationship, the friendship that we're, the conversation that we're having with whoever, that if they have lost something, that we should never assume that they will be processing it in the way that we think we might. It's quite as simple as that, really, whether it's the loss of a loved one, pick any of the last 10 losses, if that was you, never assume that that individual is feeling the same way about it as you might.
Yeah. I mean, I am not a fan of tarantulas. If they didn't exist, I'd be all good with that. But if someone lost a tarantula they'd had for like 20 years, I don't know how long they live, but I feel like they live a long time. You know, I know now to engage with that grief and let them do what they do. I don't need to understand it or like tarantulas, but I can still help them through that loss. So I think, yeah, that's a really important thing.
So the important question there to ask then, if you're not sure how they're feeling about it, you know, if they've just lost a motorbike, they've had to give it up, then clearly you say to them, and how do you feel about that?
Yeah, that must be hard.
Let them tell you how they feel about it.
Yeah, and go from there. Mm. And try and get the real answer. Because I know some people will feel like they have to brush it off because you might not understand it. Like, oh, no one's going to understand me losing a tarantula. But, oh, yeah, I'm good, I'm fine. I would push again beyond that and be like, really? Because you had that pet a long time. That must be quite difficult to not have him around anymore. Like, just see.
And then they say, don't, you might be crying.
So if you're new to the podcast, you might not be aware that the last question that we ask all of our lost guests is, what's your Herman? And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, you can hear a short episode explaining about what that means at thesilenty.com/Herman. But in short, it's basically what would our guests want to share with others? So it's something that you've learned through your loss and that you think it might help others in their loss. So that's the last question that we ask them.
And we call these Hermans. And then every time we do an episode like this, every 10th loss, we reflect back on and compile the Hermans from the lovely people that we've just been referring to. So let's play them again now. This is what we affectionately call the
Hermontage.
My Herman, children learn by example. They learn by what we do, not what we say. So my Herman, you know, the thing that I want to pass on, share, is talk to your children. Tell them how your day is going. Tell them when you're upset. Tell them when you're not feeling great. Tell them when you're hormonal. But actually talk to your children, because then they will talk to you. The best piece of advice my mother ever gave me was, your children are going to be adults far longer than their kids. So you want to have a relationship with them their entire life. By the time my children were 18, I was saying, right, you're adults now, you're my equals. And we're best of friends. Show them by example how to talk, and then you will teach them how to talk to other people as well.
Truly value what you have, because I think there are so many hardships that families with kids just generally with disabilities have. But you also have good things, right? For example, my relationship with Vlad, we share all the hardship and generally, I don't know, love each other a lot. So I think having that special relationship with another human being means a lot. Then having a job that takes my mind off as well is something that I really appreciate. And then having the community and friends who are very supportive in our journey. So really focusing your mind on the things that you do have, you just start valuing things more.
Mine would be a phrase, «Все познается в сравнении». And the literal translation is, everything is discovered or understood in comparison or in relation to other things. And that's a phrase that my mom used to say so many times in my childhood, so I kind of, it's imprinted in my brain, that whatever condition you're in, there are many people who have it worse and many people who have it much better than you. Whatever it is, there is a spectrum there. So it definitely has helped me through hard times, but it helps with the negative effects really well, because yes, we've lost something here, but compared to families who've also lost this and have additional issues, we're in a better state. It does help to understand what is the range of the possibilities so that you can adjust your emotions a little bit.
It is the courage to go deep with the hard questions and to trust that as we go deep with a lot of our hard questions in life, that there are treasures and answers that can be found, that it's not going to take you down this spiral of increasing despair, but that as we move past the superficial and just have the courage to dig deep, that that's where you build a foundation of rock. Then when storms come, you've done the hard work of laying down that foundation, and there's a different kind of steadfastness and peace that can be found. Even when it's still a storm, there's a foundation that you have. And I think that just comes with that courage of going deep.
I think surrounded with hope, because if you don't have hope, then you're going to wither away, linked with faith and love, but also a sense of humor and to be able to laugh. That I was picked up some writing the other day around the tragic and comic, and how important that is to have those two side by side. And I've also put down here, live. Carry on living, get out there, live, and dance.
One of my favorite books, movies, is The Wizard of Oz. Dorothy is coming into her age, and then she must meet all of the aspects of herself, the scarecrow and the brain and the lion and the courage and the tin man and the heart. And she must conquer all of those aspects within herself to really have ownership of her power. Because throughout the story, she's walking with those shoes, but she doesn't realize the power she has. And then she must meet the wizard and realize the wizard does not have the control until she can lift the curtain and realize that she is bigger than him and smarter, and that she's got the power, that she can then go home. That is what we must do.
My Herman is, look at the bigger picture. Bad things happen in life. You just got to take the pros and cons out of it. And yeah, look at the bigger picture. That's kind of my motto.
Ultimately, it's that you have to let go. It doesn't mean it won't still hurt. But if you don't let go of the pain and the guilt and the regret and the frustration and the annoyance of the situation, I think it has the possibility to just eat you alive and dominate you. And you know, nothing is worth that in life. It is hard, but you have to keep letting go, and it might be over and over again, and you have to keep doing it. But every time I think of it, and I feel like I could just get really bitter and twisted about the situation, I have to make the choice to let that go. You have to keep making that decision to let go of the bad stuff and remember the good.
My Herman is that the loss of an identity can be an opportunity for you to find out who you really are, and the adversity you despise can actually be the very thing that releases your best gifts into the world. In the hands of God and given enough time, the very thing that you hate can actually be the making of you.
When one is like really enveloped in grief and depression, that you have to remember that that light is still up there, that light of hope, healing, wholeness. It's not very far away. It's still there. It hasn't gone away. It's still there. It is still a wonderful life, despite the difficulties that you go through. That's my Herman.
Love to hear those. And if you want to hear the full unedited versions, then of course you need to listen through to our losses 31 through to 40 in the episodes.
As always, thank you so much for listening to The Silent Why. We're so grateful that people choose to join us and want to be with us on this journey as we try and find 101 losses.
A bit of a news update, as you've hopefully heard through the short The Silent Fridays episode. We're releasing episodes now on just Tuesdays and not Fridays. And this is in order to create some space to branch out into other things attached to the podcast, other exciting things.
Exciting. But don't worry, it's all the same content. Blogs, TV analysis episodes.
Check out Claire's Grief in Ghosts and Loss in Lasso for more on those. I can't wait to hear what you come up with next.
Yeah, I'm running out of alliteration. Let's Chat episodes, 101 Loss episodes, of course, and any announcements that we do. So we're changing the format slightly just to build the brand into other areas. And we'll keep you posted about this on the podcast and through social media at The Silent Why Pod on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn or Twitter.
We'd love you to find out a bit more about us and why we're doing this. You can use our website, which is thesilentwhy.com, or also listen to our story about childlessness in two parts in episode 3 of the podcast, and find the full 101 loss list as we update it every week. That's all on thesilentwhy.com/101losses.
And don't forget, there are many ways to support the show and my full-time work in putting it out. Financially, it helps me cover the yearly costs of hosting and getting it out, but there's also leaving a review, which helps the show grow. So if you can't give financially, maybe that'll put the show in front of a millionaire and they can help me. Heck, dream big, maybe even a billionaire. Or you could just share the podcast on social media or with a friend going through loss. It all helps to spread the word.
And above all, thank you for listening all over the world. Thank you to our podcast host who tells us good news. We've had downloads on all 6 continents in order of popularity. Europe, number 1. Followed by North America, Oceania, Asia, Africa and South America. The stats also tell us we've reached people in 93 countries and territories. What an incredible privilege. And don't forget, we provide transcripts for every episode. So if you want someone to hear an episode but it's not in their language or they can only read it, then you can find a link to the transcripts of every episode at the bottom of the show notes.
And we're going to finish this episode like we do every lost episode with a quote. And this one sums up so much of what I want to portray through this podcast and my writing. It was written in 1972 by Leo Buscaglia. It's not enough to have lived. We should be determined to live for something. May I suggest that it be creating joy for others, sharing what we have for the betterment of personkind, bringing hope to the lost and love to the lonely.